And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. DJ Bucky here. And Buck, let's jump in real quick. Started off last night, big NFC East matchup, Redskins-Eagles. And first take for me is just, I thought, you know, Wentz is going to be the star of the show. We'll get into plenty about Carson Wentz and the way he played. I thought Cousins played well as well. I thought both those teams offensively did a nice job. I think the Eagles' defense a little bit better than that Washington Redskins defense.
Absolutely. I think the common theme that we are beginning to see, the top teams, we've talked about it. You've talked about it specifically about investing in the front four, investing in the front seven. When I look at the Philadelphia Eagles and what they have up front, the wave of bodies that they can throw at you on that defensive line, it's scary when you just think about the amount of guys that they have. The fact that their first-round pick, Derek Barnett and Chris Long, play on the second team speaks volumes about what they have. Fletcher Cox is the guy that is the leader. Brandon Graham coming off the edge. Vinnie Curry. So many other guys that they're able to just throw at you that guys are playing at a max 30 snaps, but they're dominating in that limited action. They may have revealed the blueprint that we know Jacksonville follows, but that might be the blueprint to getting it done. Having eight or nine bodies on the defensive line that can come after you in waves.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Just the line shift they throw out there, always fresh bodies. They can all hunt the quarterback. They won that game. I believe it linebacker was Najee Good, Nigel Bradham, and because of injuries, Joe Walker. Those were the linebackers in that game. But and corner-wise, I know Jalen Mills is playing pretty well. Patrick Robinson has been okay. They're good at safety, but corner, not great. Linebacker, bunch of, you know, guys people aren't really familiar with in this contest. They're so dominant up front, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And I go back to my time at Carolina. We went to the Super Bowl with two undrafted players playing cornerback, Terry Cousins, Reggie Howard. But up front, Julius Peppers, Chris Jenkins, Michael Rucker, Brenton Buckner. If you're really good at the defensive line, it masks so many flaws that you may have at other places because the quarterback doesn't have time. I'm beginning to think that the best evaluators, the best team builders, they understand, yes, you have to get a quarterback, but they also understand that the game is won up front. And it used to just be pass rushes on the outside, but it's a collection of guys inside and outside that can hunt the quarterback.
And Wentz was awesome in this game. The interception, when I went back and watched it this morning on tape, really I thought Torrey Smith kind of took the wrong path. It was a post. He thought he was going to keep it tight and skinny, so he threw it up over the top. And Torrey ended up cutting across the field a little bit. So a little miscommunication on that interception. Otherwise, Carson was outstanding. I think one of the things that jumps out to me, people point to that Houdini act, to him escaping. You don't appreciate just how big and strong that dude is unless you stand next to him. He is huge, and he is athletic. He's a legitimate MVP candidate. It's not like he's one of five. He's one of, like, two or three. He's right there in that mix.
Oh, absolutely. I think here's the funny thing, and I made the comparison when he was coming out. When I looked at him in North Dakota State, the first thing I wrote in my notes after I was done with all the notes, whatever, I wrote down comparison, Cam Newton. And the reason I compared him to Cam Newton at the time was – his physical stature, his arm talent, and his running prowess. Like, we didn't get an opportunity to really see him his first year in Philadelphia actually use his legs to the level that he could. But what we're seeing now is he's a legitimate dual-threat quarterback. They don't use him in that capacity, but when you see them do zone read stuff, when you see him scrambling by time, to me, he is a better version right now of what Cam Newton is and could be in terms of playing the game in a very traditional fashion while also bringing other stuff to the table.
I'm going to get to my college report in a second on Carson, but before I do, reached out on Twitter. I think it was Dan Orlovsky actually reached out and said, has anybody used a comparison for Steve McNair with Wentz? And I was around McNair with the Ravens in the back end of his
smaller
career.
Guy.
Steve's a little bit shorter, but strong as an ox in the pocket too. You couldn't get him down. Tough. I think there's some comparison there. Obviously, McNair is a great athlete and get out and make plays with his legs. Carson does some of the same things. So that's not a bad comparison there. Here's my college report, Buck. Two-year starter, quarterback for the Bison. Lines up under center in the gun. Quick feet in the setup. Throws from a wide, firm base. He's quick to work through progressions. Throws with touch and anticipation. He's accurate underneath and intermediate. Has been a little inconsistent with his deep ball accuracy. He wasn't last night. Quick release. It's a long release, but it's quick. He can throw from a variety of arm angles. The ball doesn't jump out of his hand, but he has plenty of velocity to make all the throws. I think his arm's even a little bit better than that. Very athletic to create plays with his legs. He's effective on design QB runs. Extremely tough to hang in the pocket versus pressure. He's played well in big games. Overall, Wentz has an enticing blend of size, ability, and toughness. Don't be fooled by his level of competition. He's a big-time talent.
I mean, he is a big-time talent. I'm looking back at some of these quotes that I have on him. The comparison in terms of comparing him to Cam Newton comes from watching him play in the fall, watching him execute some of the tactics and concepts that Cam did for the Panthers, design quarterback runs, draws, power, zone read things. A creative offense coordinator could implement some of those things and take advantage of his unique athleticism. People have talked about Joe Flacco and some other guys, but he's far more athletic than that. He's not necessarily the physical specimen that Cam is, but he's big body athletic quarterback who's comfortable running and putting his body in harm's way. And I think we saw that last night. When you add in the pieces of, like, the arm talent, his pocket presence, what he's really been able to do, controlling the game at the line of scrimmage. And really, like, I don't think Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, those guys have got enough credit for what they've done. They have really put together an offense that is very similar to what he did at North Dakota State, and he's thriving. We saw him have full command and mastery of the offense last night, particularly in the fourth quarter when they let him kind of call his own plays. I mean, I think you're seeing a star kind of grow on the big stage right in front of our eyes.
No question. Let's flip it over to the Redskins side real quick before we move on. Kirk Cousins, Buck, the Redskins don't want to pay him all that money. Somebody's going to do it. He played good last night. Shoot, he was 30 of 40 for over 300 yards, three touches and a pick. And he got hit constantly in that football game. I think Cousins, you can debate, you know, is he a top 10 quarterback? I think you can have that debate. I don't think you can have a debate on whether he's a top 12 quarterback in that mix. I think he's firmly in that mix.
I mean, I think he's certainly in that mix. I think when you make the dividing line, the top 15, he's there. And I think the big challenge that I wanted to see this year is how is he going to respond when they remove some of the pieces around him? And they took away two very, very good receivers in Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. And we're actually seeing that they might regret pulling those guys away because they have to attack the game a little differently. On the outside, they're not getting the production that they wanted from Terrell Pryor. They don't have those threats. So Cousins is having to work from inside out this year as opposed to outside in. We're seeing more of the running backs involved in the passing game. We continue to see Jordan Reed and the tight end use, but he doesn't have the dominant threat on the outside like he had with DeSean Jackson. I think this year has shown that Kirk Cousins has the ability to change his game based on the personnel around him. That bodes well for him being a guy that can go on to another team when he gets to free agency.
How about these numbers? This is what, with what he's done right now, this is the projection going forward for the rest of the season based off what he's done. 4,300 yards, 4,365, 32 touchdowns, 8 picks, completing 68.2% of his passes. He's going to get paid, Buck.
I mean, he's absolutely going to get paid. I mean, we knew it. We understand that he held all the cards. He is going to get paid, and you think about the teams that are out there available. I know he's been really, really tied to the San Francisco 49ers, but imagine what the Jacksonville Jaguars could do with a guy like Kirk Cousins at quarterback. He would allow them to really take advantage of the weapons that they have on the outside. It would give them an opportunity to really make plays and do some things in the passing game to complement what I think is a very formidable running game and to complement a defense that looks like it's a top five defense. Kirk Cousins would be a great fit there.
Oh, I'm with you on that one. I think you'll have a lot of suitors when you look at some of the teams out there still looking for a quarterback. Kirk Cousins, he's going to drive the market. Every quarterback now and in the future needs to thank him too because he's going to drive that number way up for everybody else.
I mean, he absolutely can get it up to the $30 million mark. He's going to get paid. And regardless of what the Redskins do in terms of their record, I think Kirk Cousins has already proven enough to justify being a big marquee franchise quarterback.
How about inside? Let's go big picture NFC East. Offensively, when you look at this division, Philly's got the number 5 offense in the league. Dallas, number 6 in the league. Washington, number 8. Three of the top offenses in the NFL and the NFC East. And then you have the New York Giants at 27th. Wow.
That says a lot. But
even, I know injuries,
even,
but still.
Even in that, like let's go beyond that part. If we pull back another layer, we talk about offense, we talk about the league being a quarterback-driven league. If we had to rank them, would we rank them in that order in terms of quarterbacks? Would we say Philly,
Eli would be
Dallas
at the bottom of the list. He would be.
Right. Like, and I think that's shocking for some people to realize that, but Eli Manning, a 2-time Super Bowl MVP, is the worst quarterback in this division. And so if I'm the New York Giants and I'm looking at it and knowing that Eli is in the latter part of his career, it's time to look at a quarterback, and it's time to look at one very, very early because you're going to have some star power at that position to compete with the quarterbacks. The young quarterbacks, particularly in Philadelphia and Dallas, that are going to be at the top of the division for a while.
It's going to be fun to watch as these teams grow up together. All right, Buck, 2016 draft class. We're talking about the sophomores. Wentz is in that mix. I thought maybe for Thursday's pod, and we also have our video show on Thursday, we could go back and rank the top 10 guys from that 2016 draft class. But just to wet your whistle a little bit here, look at some of the names. And once you have it up, you have the 26. Read out the top 10 of who's drafted in this draft.
I mean, if we just go through the top five, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Joey Bosa, Ezekiel Elliott, Jalen Ramsey.
That's some dudes.
All five guys are Pro Bowl players. If we stop the season right now, Jared Goff's going to the Pro Bowl, Carson Wentz, Joey Bosa, Ezekiel Elliott, Jalen Ramsey, all those guys deserve to be in Pro Bowl consideration. After that, Ronnie Stanley, DeForest Buckner, Jack Conklin, Leonard Floyd. The only guy that's a little out of place, Eli Apple. I wouldn't put Eli Apple. But the rest of those guys have all played to their level of talent. You go down a little farther. Let's see. Before his injury, Taylor Decker was playing pretty well.
Playing really well.
Deron Lee's beginning to make plays.
How about let's go down, though. Let's go down outside the first round with Dak Prescott, who's going to be definitely be one of the top 10 players in this draft.
Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill is another one who has been outstanding. I mean, this is – we go back to the J.J. Watt draft class with A.J. Green and all those dudes. Now, that was an all-timer. This one is starting to get into the discussion right now. It's one of the best drafts of the last decade. And I remember in the run-up to that draft – thinking, man, this draft has no sex appeal. Jared Goff, you know, coming out of Cal, it's, you know, Cal didn't have tremendous success there. Then you got Carson Wentz. People are like, I don't even never even heard of North Dakota State. Where's that? I mean, we knew Wentz with what we do, but the outside in was kind of like, eh, this is not
how
a very
good
draft. How
many times did we talk about Goff or Wentz, and now we're back to it?
I know. We did a show, hashtag Goff or hashtag Wentz.
Yep.
We have three guys that we talk about at quarterback that are franchise quarterbacks, and I know people still are waiting to see if Goff is going to come back to earth. Dak Prescott, there was that debate. But I think we now can say that in this draft, they revealed three quarterbacks that look like they will be top 10 quarterbacks. And so if you go back and you look at 2011 didn't have the quarterback power that this class had, because you had Cam Newton, but you had Jake Locker, Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder. Those guys didn't pan out. Now, I think that's a good comparison in terms of talking about an all-timer. Because if you're able to get three really good quarterbacks, three quarterbacks that look like they can be top 10 talents, plus you get maybe
how about Jordan Howard as well, who was second in the league in rushing last year? Derrick Henry, who we're starting to see come on. That's another good player out of that 2016 draft class. I mean, it's a really, really good group. Michael Thomas, the second-round pick, who's been awesome.
Tyreek Hill.
You mentioned Tyreek Hill. Hunter Henry, who's coming off a couple good games here. I mean, it's a really, really good-looking group, Buck.
Really good. I mean, here's the thing about the draft. Oh, man, we haven't even talked about the guy that you discussed, Yannick
Ngakoue. Yeah.
A guy who's stepped up and been a really, really good player. There have been a ton of players, and I think that's the beauty of the draft, is that sometimes you think you know, but you really have no idea. When these guys get in the right situation, when they're given an opportunity under the right coaching staff, they can exceed expectations. And I think we're seeing in 2016 a draft that we thought was very,
yeah, a little bit better than that.
Some guys have really emerged and come out of that.
All right, last thing on the NFL front here before we switch over to some college and an interview that I'm really looking forward to getting into here. Let's go offensive line of the week. This is presented by the Ford F-Series. This is something our good buddy Sean O'Hara does every week. NFL.com/Ford. You can check out his built Ford Tough offensive line of the week article where he actually ranks top five offensive lines of the week. Are we in agreement on this one, Bucky, where we're going? I think I know where we're going.
I think we have to go with the Dallas Cowboys. The way they dominated the San Francisco 49ers, because San Francisco 49ers, you can say what you want to about their record. Their defense had played pretty well. They've been pretty stingy up front. They have a very, very talented front four. And the Dallas Cowboys just were able to have their way, push guys around, much like we expected them to from the outset. But that performance this weekend was the first time we saw Dallas Cowboys offensive line look like the Cowboys offensive line that we've grown to know and love.
They threw the ball for 236 yards, no sacks on that offensive line, and they ran it for 265 with a 6.2 average. So
I mean, that is exactly how you want to play the game.
And 70 of those pass yards came on a screen pass that O-line got outside and put a hat on a hat. We're going to break that down on our VODs this week.
Nice. Little preview here. All right, Buck, as we move into some college football talk now, looking forward to this next interview. This is one of the best players in college football. I'm guessing – a lot of our listeners haven't heard of. So I think you'll enjoy this. All right, Buck. Well, this next guest, I got a chance to watch him actually this morning. I heard a lot about him. I know a lot of scouting buddies have been rolling through South Dakota State to check out a very talented tight end. A lot of folks believe is the best tight end in the country in college football right now, and that's Dallas Goedert. He joins us right now. Dallas, first of all, thank you so much for joining us here. We got to start out with at the very beginning. How in the world did you end up at South Dakota State?
Yeah, this question has actually been asked quite a bit. Being from a small school in South Dakota, I didn't really have a lot of offers. I had my only offer was actually to like a D2 school in Aberdeen, and Coach Stig, the head coach here, came to my high school one time, and he talked to me a little bit, came and watched me play a basketball game, we didn't really have a lot of communication. He offered me a walk-on spot, so I texted him one day. I woke up, I prayed about it quite a bit, woke up, texted him, and said, I'd like to walk on there, and he said he was excited for the next 5 years, so that's kind of how my whole recruiting process to South Dakota went.
Now, you end up at tight end, but I'm looking at your resume in high school. Quarterback, wide receiver, safety, linebacker, kicker, punter, punt returner.
Is that
you
it?
You played everything except tight end. How did you become a tight end with the Jackrabbits?
Yeah, for real. In high school, in a small town, not a ton of athletes. So they just kind of put me wherever I could get the ball the easiest. So, but when I got here, my size was kind of the reason I got put at tight end. Being 6'5", with the frame that I had, it was really easy just to fill the role of a tight end.
Well, you played a lot of different positions. You also played a bunch of different sports, which I love to see, and we love to see as scouts and evaluators. We want to see guys diversify a little bit, develop that different athletic profile. And I've seen the basketball stuff. That's pretty normal for football players, especially tight ends. And you see some track. Okay, I get it. When I looked in your stuff, and I'm seeing that you come from a family that knows how to ride unicycles, this is maybe my all-time favorite nugget that I've had on a draft prospect. How in the world did you become a family of, I guess I call them unicyclists? Is that a word?
Yeah, I believe that's right. well, there was one day I was looking through the JCPenney catalog for Christmas, what I wanted, and I saw a unicycle. I thought that'd be really cool to try. So I told my mom I wanted a unicycle, and she's like, yeah, actually, your grandpa has a bunch of them sitting in his shop. So we went out there and got one, and she, my mom, and my sisters used to ride it all the time. So we brought it, and she just popped right on and started riding it. And I'm like, man, I want to be able to do that. So I just practiced and figured out how to ride it. And my family's been riding in parades every 4th of July ever since I was probably about 8 years old. So
I got to ask you, because this is the question I'm sure is in a lot of people's mind when you see people on a unicycle. How the heck do you get on that thing?
It's actually a pretty simply, just put your feet on there and just kind of jump on and start pedaling.
You better not miss a step.
Your pedal to the lean, I guess.
I'd lose some teeth if I tried to jump on that thing.
I mean, that's unbelievable. So you're fascinated by his ability to be a unicyclist. I'm still fascinated by your basketball prowess, because we've seen so many tight ends come into the league that have basketball backgrounds that have had success. When you think about your basketball career and the things that you were able to learn playing basketball, what from basketball translates to the football field that allows you to have success at tight end?
I mean, really, basketball and football correlate quite a bit together. I mean, a lot of jump balls that are thrown to me are kind of like going up for a rebound. You just have to high point it and get it before anybody else can. And I mean, there's just so many different things. Like if you have a man guarding you to go by him, it's just kind of like basketball. You have to cross up a defender to get by him. So just obviously you don't have the ball in your hand when you're doing it, but there's just so many different things, like back cuts to the basket and everything. It's just kind of finding the open spot. Just a lot of things in basketball correlate a lot to football that have helped me in my game.
Well, I had a chance to go through, and with the computer program we have here at the NFL Network, it's really cool. You can sort targets, so I can look at every ball that's been thrown to you over the last couple of years. And you have some highlight reel grabs now, some unbelievable. We just saw one of them a second ago, the one-handed catch. In that moment, the moment that you grab a ball with one hand in the back of the end zone like that, are you immediately knowledgeable of the fact that, okay, this thing's probably going to hit the internet, it's probably going to go a little someplace?
Yeah, that catch that you're talking about against Drake, it was like SportsCenter top 5 play, I think, out of the top 10, and it was really cool. I know I caught it. I knew it was a pretty cool catch, but I didn't realize like how cool it looked until it was on the video board. And everybody was just kind of watching it, and the whole place was silent. We were about ready to kick. Their whole staff was watching it. All the fans were silent. Once the replay got over, everybody started cheering, and it was really cool seeing it. Once I saw it for the first time on the replay, I knew it was a really cool catch, and it would be kind of all over everything.
Yeah, it went viral. Yeah, you make a catch like that, it's going to go viral, no question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It is going viral. And I think one of the things that I'm always intrigued. When you look at games on Sundays and Monday nights, and when you look at the NFL game, is there a tight end that you may pattern your game after?
Yeah, we do a lot of things that the we get a lot of our plays from the Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs. I've watched quite a bit of Travis Kelce, and I think I play quite a bit like him. There's just like different things that he does, the way he can move, his run after the catch, and just a lot of things. I think my game resembles his quite a bit.
Bucky, who did you have for a comp?
I had Zach Ertz from the Philadelphia Eagles. I thought your athleticism, your ability to play inside, outside, be it as a tight position slot, to create a bunch of big plays in the pass game, I thought you reminded me of the Eagles tight end.
Well, I'm going to give you mine real quick, and then I'll get your take on it. I think the most underrated tight end in the NFL for the last 2 years is a guy named Cameron Brate, who's down there with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who's been outstanding for Jameis Winston. And I compared you to him just because your ability to work in the seam and to be able to make contested catches. You have a feel for working in the middle of the field. And as a former quarterback, having somebody that can go into that dirty area and get the job done is something that you love. And I just love the way that you play in that portion of the field. You take a lot of pride in that. You have a lot of contact catches, which is what you want to see from a tight end.
Yeah, obviously, anytime the ball is thrown to me, I think my quarterback, my coaches, everybody believes that I'm going to make the play. So, obviously, when you have that much faith in you, just anytime the ball is thrown to you, I plan on catching it, whether there's a little bit of contact or not. Being a bigger body, that always plays to your advantage. So, that's just kind of my thing. Anytime the ball is thrown to me, I need to make the catch. If I can touch it, I can catch it.
You know, one of the things that we do here, Dallas, is we have a game where we call the three H's. What is your biggest highlight, your biggest hardship, and who is your greatest hero? So if we had to go back and ask you, what is the biggest highlight that you've had throughout your career, what would you say it is?
I'd probably have to go back to the NDSU game last year up there when we beat them for the first time in like 8 meetings or whatever. We were able to get the rock back. It was a pretty it was a really close game. We won on one of the last plays of the game. So just that whole game, the team atmosphere in the locker room after the bus ride home, it was just a ton of fun getting back to Brookings and everybody just high on their horses, just really excited. It was just a really cool experience.
All right, how about your biggest hardship you've had to overcome in life? Could be football related, could be off the field.
Growing up in South Dakota has been a pretty easy life for me. I've been blessed with great family and everything. But when I lost my grandma, it was my true freshman year here. She was really close to me. I spent a lot of time with her in the summers, and just going through that without my parents or my sisters here, just kind of having to do that on my own is probably one of the harder things I've went through.
It sounds like your grandma was very, very close to you. But if I had to ask you, who is your hero, who would you reply?
Man, that's tough. Maybe my grandpa Gordy. He's just a great guy. He's a great family man. He's raised, I think he had 6 kids, and they all live really close. Just a really great family man. He's just kind of done everything right. He's been nominated as like the North Dakota Person of the Year. So just kind of the way he lives his life is just kind of how I'd like to model how I could live my life.
Oh, that's outstanding. Gordy is a great name, by the way. You need to hand that name down when you have children. Let's keep that name alive. Last thing for me as we wrap up here, Dallas, we're going to see you a bunch. We'll probably see you at the Senior Bowl. We'll see you at the Combine, and we'll hopefully have you in here to the studio for Path to the Draft as we get towards the draft. I just have one request. If you look over your shoulder, you see that basketball. There's a South Dakota State basketball there. It looks like it's got the blue and gold going on. We would like one of those for Move the Sticks. We're going to put that in the background. It's a good-looking basketball. It's a multicolored ball, and we'd like to get our hands on that thing.
Sounds good. I could probably do that for you.
All right. That'll work. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Well, that was fun, Bucky. That's a really good football player. I got a chance, again, to study him recently, and man, a lot of comparisons being made amongst scouts talking about Adam Shaheen. We saw from Ashland last year, not a huge school, but a big athletic dude the Bears took in the second round. I'll be anxious to see when Goddard ends up going. I would say right now I kind of penciled him in just off my evaluation. I thought he was kind of a third round guy, he does great in the postseason in the all-star games. Maybe he could vault up even higher than that, but big, fast, and tough. Pretty good qualities to have.
Very good qualities to have at that position. You're always looking for a blue-collar guy, a guy that can get it done, not only as a blocker but as a receiver. He certainly has shown those qualities. It'll be interesting to see how high he climbs after we get a look at him at these All-Star games.
All right, let's jump into some college football. Last week, Buck, you went to Wyoming, right? Did you go check out Josh Allen?
Boise State. Got a chance to see Josh Allen versus the Boise State Broncos. And I continue to say that he is going to be a fascinating evaluation because it comes down to the potential versus the production. Right now, the production is nowhere near what do you expect a top 10 prospect to deliver, particularly at quarterback. But the potential is there only because he's size, has everything that you want, 6'5", over 225, 230 pounds, big-time arm talent, probably one of the more impressive arms that you're going to see in person, has the ability, the athleticism, and the running skills to make plays on the move. But he just hasn't put it all together. And so the trick for evaluators and team builders is to kind of figure out, do they have the personnel in place to get him? And when I mean personnel, do they have the offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, and the surrounding pieces to allow him to develop into a big-time prospect? And it's tough because there's a part of me that says he's a bigger, faster, stronger Blake Bortles, and I don't want to tag him with that. But right now, that's kind of the thing that strikes me. I know others have given other stronger comparisons, but it's just hard to look at how he's played and the production that he's put up and to kind of fully endorse him as a top 10 pick, even though you see the traits are there for him to go.
I haven't watched this tape yet. Were there a bunch of drops?
You know, it's just kind of like a sleepy game. I mean, there's some drops. There's a poor throw here or there. There's some wild throws that he makes. It's just it's kind of the inconsistent play that you've seen throughout his career and throughout, like, this season. And so if you want to make a highlight, you know, obviously in the war room, in the draft room, if you make a highlight tape with 25 plays, you can put 25 of his greatest plays, and he's going to look like a number one overall pick. If you take 25 bad plays, you can make him look like a third or fourth round pick. It's really going to be subjective in terms of what do you need right now and how confident you are that he can develop into something. But I'll say this. All bets are off. If Pat Mahomes can go into top 10, this kid is a top 10 talent. I just don't know what you do with it.
Yeah. It's going to be a fascinating evaluation. I had a scout texting me. I think we talked about this on Sunday. Said that he was all in on him. He just said with what's around him, his point was if I took him out of Wyoming and dropped him in USC, he would be no doubt number one pick. Would be no debate whatsoever. And then I said, first of all, I think you're overvaluing a little bit of what's at USC right now. That's not the most talented group up front, especially.
And I think
very average.
He might be giving him too big of a pass. Like, at some point, he has to be able to play. Because I will say this, and I would go on record, I say, if you drop Sam Darnold in Wyoming's offense, I think Wyoming's offense is better and more productive.
This guy's not a huge Darnold fan, so what he hit me with was, if you took Sam Darnold and put him in Wyoming, he would look like Kevin Hogan. I was like, whoa.
Wow.
I can't go there.
I definitely can't go there. Like,
but
I get it.
It's interesting. And by the way, let's jump over to that SC game. They got absolutely smashed. It was 28-0 in the second quarter. That game was over. Darnold is credited with the fumble, and I get accused of being a Darnold apologist. Look, it was a bad snap. He didn't get the handle on it. That was kind of a fluky fumble. I don't really put that one on him. The interception, 100% on him. It was a poor read, forcing the ball into the corner. Did not see the corner sinking and had a turnover. You like to see him eliminate that. Outside of that, Bucky, I think he was like 20 or 28. He was pretty efficient with what he had. And they are so dead dog average up front on the offensive line when you watch them. And it's not they don't even look the part on the hoof. That's what's so weird. You're USC, you've got the pick of the litter. If you line up Notre Dame's offensive line and you had them right next to the USC offensive line, it looks like the varsity, it looks like the junior high next to them. I mean, they're not filled out. It's just not a good look.
No, it's not a good look. I think here's the thing that I look for in quarterbacks. I mean, it's not necessarily all the numbers. You do look at the traits, but I just kind of want to get a sense of how they play. And I think the big thing that we have with Sam Darnold, even though he'll fall short of the number of wins that you want if he came out with like 23 wins, if we're going by the Bill Parcells thing, is I've seen him in enough big moments to know that he is a quarterback that has the it factor. I've seen him in the Rose Bowl. We've seen him in other big games.
Texas was a big one.
He's played. We've seen him bring him back Texas. We've seen him bring his team back against Utah when they were down by 14 points. We saw him continue to battle in the Notre Dame game. He has pelts on the wall that I feel good about. Some of these other quarterbacks won't have the big wins on their resume. And so it's very similar to me to the Jameis Winston debate. You can poke holes in his game, and you can poke holes in he has too many turnovers and he's going to finish with double-digit turnovers and all the like. But at the end of the day, if it's a two-minute drill and you can hand the ball to one of these three quarterbacks, who do you want to hand the ball to? The history suggests that if you hand the ball to Sam Darnold, he'll find a way to get the team in the end zone.
If you're Sam Darnold, are you coming back?
I've always, you know, been an advocate. Go ahead and go back, get more starts under your belt. Especially if he was a junior, go ahead. He's a sophomore. I mean, Andrew Luck went back. Mariota ended up going back as well, right? Didn't he come back for his junior year?
Yeah, he's a sophomore. I think here's the thing that complicates it for him. I think
Jameis is the one that didn't.
Jameis came out. But here's the thing. If you're Sam – I guess we can say it. If you're Sam Darnold, let's just say Sam Darnold hypothetically comes out. If the Cleveland Browns
– he's scared. Bucky's so scared of Cleveland.
Well, you have to be. I mean, like, they have shown that they don't have the ability to develop a quarterback. And, like, we can put it on the coaching staff. We can put it on the front office, wherever you want to put it. They played 20 quarterbacks in the last 43, 44 games. The way that they've handled DeShone Kizer, to me, suggests that they have no idea how to take a young quarterback and really develop them. We've seen other quarterbacks, and I'm not saying – like Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett is coming to the league, was a guy that was a nondescript guy. He goes to New England. He has to start as a rookie. They don't necessarily put it all on him. They yep. found a way to allow him to grow, and he's grown into a player that in Indianapolis, like – is he a top 10 player? No, but he's been serviceable
functional
enough as a starter that you can win games with him. I don't think Cleveland understands how to take a young quarterback and protect him enough to allow them to grow into being a functional, successful quarterback. Last year they had Cody Kessler. Cody Kessler started 8 games. Evidently he wasn't good enough. They go get DeShone Kizer. Cody Kessler becomes the third quarterback. They don't think he's worthy of being a guy that can even compete for the starting job. Now they turn to him, they put him in, take him out. Like, to me, it's just a mess. And so
you know who their best quarterback was, by the way?
Brock Osweiler?
Brock Osweiler. They should have kept him.
They could have kept
him. You got to pay him the check. You might as well keep him.
Could have
been their best option.
DeShone Kizer could have developed quietly out of the public light and been probably a better quarterback in 2018, 2019. So now if I'm Sam Darnold, and more importantly, if I'm Sam Darnold's representatives, would I want to subject my guy to that kind of chaos and carousel? I can't say that I would. He owes all the cards. He can go back. Yeah, I know people are saying, well, Cleveland could very well get that pick. Well, if they get that pick in 2019, then we'll deal with it then.
He can still come back for another year.
Yeah.
He can come back for his senior year.
We just keep stringing it out.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, though. I talked to a personnel buddy that all these guys, you go on school visits, you stay in Los Angeles. It's a twofer. You go see UCLA, you go see SC. So everybody that's evaluating these quarterbacks gets a chance to see Rosen and Darnold back-to-back. And he brought it up, was fascinating. He said, okay, if you just break him down, Rosen's got better feet. Rosen's got a better release. He's got a stronger arm. He's more accurate. Take all that. It's incredible. I take Darnold. He just said the makeup is off the charts with Darnold. And he said, I trust him. I believe him. Basically, the floor is higher for Darnold. He felt like the ceiling for Rosen. Rosen has to go to he's a pure drop back guy. He's got to go to that type of system. He said he's a play action back to the defense. He could be lethal in that type of a system.
Here's what I've said in comparing the two, because I think both of these guys are very, very capable of being number one overall picks. I said the path is far more open for Sam Darnold to be picked by all 32 just because of the person that he is and the way that he comes off. I think it's easier for people to buy into the kid, which is why he'll have more options at the top of the board. Josh Rosen, to me, is all those things. I do believe he is probably a superior player in certain aspects when it comes to the passing game, the footwork, the arm talent, the way that he plays in the pocket. However, his personality is not necessarily going to jibe or connect with all 32 of the coordinators and head coaches in the league. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't play or that he won't have success. I just think
he's got to get in the right spot.
A differing guy. Much like, and I compare him personality-wise a little bit to Jay Cutler in terms of it is going to take a guy that is not a BSer, a guy that can kind of understand football, can talk it to him, and is not afraid to have to explain the why. Because when you talk to Josh Rosen, he wants to know, why are we calling this? Why? And if you're threatened by challenges from a quarterback, you're going to have a tough time because intellectually the kid is pretty bright. He has a high football IQ, and you're going to have to challenge that by giving him concepts that excite him and make him want to come to work every day.
All right, you know what quarterback I got to go watch this year? I watched him over the summer. I peeked at him a little bit this year. You saw him play live earlier this year. I got to see what's going on with Lamar Jackson, man. But just scan scouting, highlight scouting, box score scouting looks phenomenal. I got to jump in here and see what's going on.
Here's the thing that frustrates me about the opinions that I've heard about Lamar Jackson. And I'm not saying that, oh, I'm the lone expert or whatever. But I think it's interesting to me that people are so willing to dismiss what he's able to do on the collegiate level and say that he can't do it in the NFL level.
Especially when you watch NFL football right now.
I mean, he's a big-time talent. He's probably the most explosive player at the position that we'll see in the 2018 or 2019 class. He is Michael Vick 2.0 in terms of his explosiveness, his ability to create, his improvisational skills. He has a big-time arm. He can make throws. He's not the most accurate passer, so you have to work around those things. But is he someone that I've read that should be playing wide receiver? I think that's so disrespectful to his game and where we've come at the position. I believe he is someone that a creative offensive coordinator can find a way to maximize his talents. For instance, let's say that he went to Buffalo and was asked to do the same things that Tyrod Taylor is asked to do. Do we think Lamar Jackson could do that? I think so.
How about Jacksonville?
I think in Jacksonville, you think about adding Lamar Jackson to that running
attack.
Being able to do the same thing, stretch, boot, come out the back door. I mean, like, there are things that you can do, but I think it's going to take the right offensive coordinator that is creative enough to do it. It's unfortunate that Kansas City already has their quarterback and quarterback of the future, but, man, Andy Reid will work wonders with that kind of talent. I think another guy who could work wonders with a guy like that, I think Mike McCarthy could work with that, considering what he's been able to do with quarterbacks throughout his time. I think he could take a young quarterback and teach him how to play the position the right way.
Yeah, there's some interesting options for teams there. I mean, I look, Ben's not getting any younger. I know they got Dobbs. They drafted last year. Sorry, Sully. But
upgrade.
Getting somebody like that in there would be fun to watch him.
Time
to learn, time to grow.
I mean, like really, really think about that. Now, here's the thing about Lamar Jackson, because it'd be interesting whether he grays out as a first-round talent or a second-round talent or whatever, but I do think that there would be plenty of intrigue about what could you do, what could his ceiling be if he played at the next level.
All right, let's I think we got to get out of here. I think we're a little bit time limited here with the studio space. This week picks, I'll mention it. 8-4, 8-4, Buck. We're both 8-4. Kent and Sully both 11-1. I don't know how this keeps happening. I find myself down 12 games to Kent right now. 12 games on
the year. I keep going crazy in Lone Wolf and Kentucky.
When do you guys make your picks is what I would like to know.
Mine are right now, and you're about to make yours here in a second. I'm about to get yours. So.
Well, not on air, you're not.
No, not on air. Absolutely not. But hey,
I feel like I should be doing some more homework on these picks or something.
Yeah, if you're Bucky, though, you can change it
on air.
So technically they're not set in stone.
That's true. That's a good point. It's a fair point.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to do better. Just as simple as that. You just got to do better. Hey, be better, do better.
This week is a new week.
Challenge for all of us out there.
Got to start somewhere.
All right, that was fun. Fun episode, boys. Nice job, Bucky. Great work. Got a lot of videos to tape here. Got to get to work. This day is not over, but it is over for this podcast. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.